Yeah. Yeah, they probably shouldn't be parking in the garage just because we're also going to need to be storing all the things that are going to be.
Yeah, he connects to a different link before you have the journal.
Yeah,
it just gathers him for sure as a journal.
Okay, so we got the owl turned on.
Yes, I think.
Okay.
Hi, Wendy. Thanks for your help with that constituent and the tree. I don't know if you, Jenny was helpful there. I talked to her today. Thank you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Wait, 8. We have 8. And there's Alan. All right. Great. And then Jack, you're right. So I think that's 4. Terrific. Okay, I've got 1:31. The date is Wednesday, August 18th, 2021. Time is 1:31. So we'll go ahead and call the meeting of the Monterey Bay Air Resources District to order. Thank you very much for everybody attending. This is a hybrid meeting under the governor's executive order given the pandemic. And we're going to do our best to see to it that everyone is served, whether they're here virtually or at the headquarters for the Air District. Why don't we start with the Pledge of Allegiance? Those that are at home, face the best flag you can find, and we'll go ahead and let's see. Jack, since you're back at home base, you want to go ahead and lead us?
Very well. I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic of America, and to the nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice
for all. Thank you very much. We'll go ahead and proceed with roll call. And before we do, I just want to formally introduce Siri. Welcome. You're going to do a great job. You already are. And we look forward to working with you. You want to go ahead and call the roll?
Yes, sir. Director Kosmicki.
Here.
Director Carbone.
Here.
Thank you. Director Trinity.
Here.
Director Friend.
Here.
Thank you. Director LeBar.
Present.
Thank you. Director Lopez.
Here.
Director McShane.
Here.
Director Eskew.
Here.
Director Phillips.
Here.
Director Story.
Here.
Director Dillon.
There.
All right. We have
quorum. All right. Thank you. So we'll move on to public comment. Any items not on the agenda that members of the public would wish to comment on? I'll check the tab here and see if there's any hands raised. I don't see anything. Any guests here? Okay. Siri, anything received or anybody present in the chambers that would like to address the board on items not on the agenda, now would be the chance.
No comments received, and I do not see any comments from the public here on the room.
Okay, moving on to reports. We did have a budget, personnel, and nominating committee meeting. Nothing to report at this time. And we'll move on to the advisory council. Rich, anything you'd wish to report on? What was their meeting?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The Advisory Council met on August 5th. The committee received presentations on our mid-year 2021 engineering and compliance activities and a report on MBAR's air quality monitoring data for the first two quarters of 2021. These are the same reports you'll receive today. A few of the members expressed that they thought that the advisory committee should be recruiting members that better reflect the diversity of our community. There were also other calls for presentations on what ANBAG is doing for climate change via their sustainable community strategy and reports from other cities and counties on what they're doing with their climate action plans. So with those things in mind, I will be placing an item on the next advisory committee agenda that more clearly defines the roles and responsibilities of the advisory committee. And then to the topic about members, we have received an advisory committee membership request from a student at Middlebury College who is working on a master's degree in environmental science. So for those board members who have not appointed a member yet or need to appoint one more, please let me know if you'd like to see her resume and letter of interest, and I can forward that to you. And if you're wondering if you've appointed or how many you've appointed, you can go to our website and look at the advisory committee and it shows your appointments or if you have vacancies available to you. That concludes my report for the advisory committee.
Excellent, thank you. Any questions for Rich regarding the report from the advisory committee?
I have a question.
Sure.
I'm just curious if there was any detail about the lack of diversity and what was meant by that, if it was ethnicity or age or a variety of things.
I think one of the members brought up that a lot of the community is Spanish-speaking, Hispanic, and that we, although there's not immediately the obvious area whose ethnicity is what, they felt that we should have more representation from that community in particular. Being sensitive to that, we can't really call out any particular ethnicity. So I'm saying diversity reflect the makeup of the community, which is primarily Hispanic.
Thank you.
Any other questions from board members? Okay, and just quickly looking at the public, seeing if any hands are raised online, not seeing any. Siri, anything in the chambers as to anything received? Okay.
No other comments in the chamber, sir.
Great, okay, thank you very much. You know, comments and referrals from chair and other board members, anything anybody would like to raise? I'll just say there's an, well, go ahead. Yeah, maybe there's some, anybody want to raise their hand or? I'll just say October 3rd, Ecology Action's doing a really cool EV ride and drive event at the Salinas Transportation Center downtown. And just sent a note to Rich to see if we can do a table. I know Central Coast Community Energy will be there and other partners. That's exciting. EV's the way. okay. Let's see. I see Mike LaBar, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Two items. I wanted to express appreciation to MBARD staff, Alan Romero. He gave a really good presentation on electric bicycles to the TAMC Bicycle and Pedestrian Facilities Advisory Committee earlier this month. And I appreciate MBARD reaching out and getting that input. Secondly, King City Community Power received their content label from the state, and we are 100% renewable. So we were glad to see that.
That's great. Great news. Thank you for sharing both of those, Mike. Appreciate what you
Thank
do.
You, Chair.
Okay. Okay. So we'll just move on to our report from Rich, our APCO. Rich, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you, Chair, members of the board. You've already met Siri, but let me give you a little bit more formal of an introduction. She is a native of Monterey, although we just acquired her from Sonoma County Library, where she was a fund development manager. Prior to that position, she was with the City of Monterey as a Library Fund Development Officer. She has considerable administrative experience that should enable her to be a very successful clerk in the executive system here at NMARC. And she's already hit the ground running, and she's got a great attitude. So we're very fortunate to have her. And I just also want to give a last shout out to Ann, who actually worked over these past several weeks, making sure that we had a smooth transition and Siri coming on, so we were able to take advantage of training opportunities from Ann. We do have new recruitments underway right now. We're recruiting for an air quality engineer. And unfortunately, we're going to have to recruit again for an air monitoring specialist. We had a couple of mishaps. We had to withdraw an offer to one individual. And the second person decided that they got a better retirement deal with the California Air Resources Board. So we're back to square one, and we'll have to re-recruit for an air monitoring specialist position. Our engineering compliance and accounting staff went live in Encelo's platform database on July 19th. This is the database that replaces our old Trackit database system. Over the past months, we've been working through issues as they come up, but overall, the new database will serve us better, both internally and for our customers. On August 13th, our engineering team issued an authority to construct the Monterey Regional Waste Management District for their permanent hydrogen sulfide treatment system. The system removes the elevated levels of hydrogen sulfide in landfill gas before it's combusted, reducing oxide of sulfur emissions into the air. And this has been a real problem with the construction, mainly drywall and wallboard that's getting put into landfill. It's creating a lot of hydrogen sulfide gas as it decomposes. And it's completely overwhelmed the existing systems in place at the landfill to capture that. Speaking of landfill and gas, we have not received any odor complaints from the public in Marina since the last board meeting. In June, food waste began being temporarily diverted from the compost operation to allow for the construction of stormwater retention ponds in the area. During this time, food waste is delivered to the compost site, covered with plastic tarp, and hauled offsite within 24 hours. And then the waste management has installed over 20 new wells in the landfill to capture and improve landfill gas collection. And then I'm really happy about this last item, especially to Amy and her efforts in securing and helping to secure a $200,000 grant for EPA. The Exchange Network grant will help us with the required EPA reporting requirements and other documentation issues that we have with EPA. And it should be able to help us crosstalk better with some of our other automated programs here at the district. So that's really good news. You'll probably be seeing an amended budget at the next board meeting, allowing us to receive those funds. In planning and air monitoring, the wood stove changeout program, which incentivizes the replacement of non-EPA certified wood stoves with clean and burn alternatives, has received 128 applications, 7 of which are low income. So in all, $169,000 of project funds have been obligated. And we've established a waiting list in case some of those folks drop off the list for various reasons. Our electric vehicle incentive program, which provides residents with incentives to purchase or lease new and used all electric or plug-in electric vehicles, is continuing this year. So far, we've received 12 applications, and we've obligated $15,000, and we've got about $435,000 remaining. We're going to be doing a push in the media to get folks to get more electric vehicles out there. This is the time. You can stack benefits from Monterey Community Power, or 3CE as they're now known, with our agency, and the $7,500 tax credit from the feds, as well as CVRP money from the state. So all in all, that adds up to a significant amount of money. The Aliso Union School District and Salinas just received in July all electric bus through the District Zero Emission School Bus Program. This was funded through a grant with the Central Coast Community Energy, and basically we put our funds together, and we were able to purchase an electric school bus for the Aliso Union School District. And then lastly, I ran into Chris Lopez, and he gave me kudos on this commercial. I'd like to play a commercial if you haven't seen it. It's running now on the news, and it's a really nice little spot that we've got going. And it's very appropriate now, since we'll probably be getting smoke from Northern California fires as we see a low pressure system move into our area.
This is the air message is brought to you by the Monterey Bay Air Resources District. Air quality here on the Central Coast is some of the best in the country. Wildfires have had a dramatic impact on air quality, and it can affect your health. Air pollution is constantly monitored across the Central Coast, and it's easy to see the results. By checking the Daily Air Quality Index online at NMR.org, you can see air quality conditions at each of NMR's monitoring sites. Be aware and check the Daily Air Quality Index. Take precautions if necessary, and breathe easy.
Then I would like to add also that we were one of the first air districts to translate the air quality index information into Spanish, and that's also available on our website. That concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Rich. Yeah, I've seen the commercial, and it's impressive. And wow, nice work on that EPA grant. Questions? Let's see. Sam Story.
Thank you, Chair. Rich, I wanted to ask if there's any update to the Community Air Protection Program that you spoke about at the last meeting.
Sorry, but to do that.
I don't think in particular, help me out. Where the Community Air Protection Program, also known as the 8617, is chugging along. We're waiting for grants monies to be dispersed. We're primarily, we don't get a lot of money from the state for that program. A lot of it goes to the larger air districts that have the concentration of disadvantaged communities. But we're going to be getting probably around $2 million of incentive monies and also implementation dollars. So we've already, I believe, given some grants away for disadvantaged communities and disadvantaged areas and low-income areas, tractor replacements and clean diesel programs. But I can't remember what I referred to if I was going to give an update, but there's not really a much going on at this point that I can recall that I need to update with. So I'll look at staff.
Rich, could I ask when there is activity on that program, could you email at least I would like to see, you know, the type of grants and the particular neighborhoods that they're going to, maybe the amount of funding that's available, just so that we could you know, maybe spread the word.
Certainly, and I'll make sure that at the next board meeting, I'll have a presentation for you on what we've done so far and what we expect to do. Part of the uncertainty is we're not sure if that money will continue from the state. It's sort of hinged on the greenhouse gas reduction funds, which doesn't have a lot to do with toxics and exposure greenhouse gases. So there's been some squabbling and some politicizing of where that money is going and how it's being used with local air districts. That may have been what I was talking about previously, but we'll give you an update and give you a sort of bird's eye view of the program and what we've done today.
That'd be great. Thank you, Rich.
Cool. Thank you. Any other questions from directors regarding Rich's report? Okay. Seeing none, we'll just quickly go to the public. Looking for any guests. Don't see any hands. Siri, are you seeing anything online, or is there anybody present that would like to address the board regarding the APCO report?
No one's online and no one's in the public area here in the room, and I did not receive any comments.
Okay, we'll move on to the consent agenda. We have 6 items on the consent agenda. Are there any board members that would like to pull an item from the consent agenda? Yes, Director Askew.
Thank you, my old school hand. Thanks, Steve. I just had a question in regards to the item number 55, the planning services And first of all, I just want to say, like, how awesome is it that we have a policy and that we're following it? Kudos to the team who made, who's following all of these, putting all these things in place. But we're talking about destroying some former Fort Ord documents. And I just wanted to just make sure that there was nothing controversial in that pile, or anything that could potentially end up in a legal dispute in the future.
Okay. Rich, you want to answer that?
Oh, number 13. Okay, so you're referring to the records destruction. Right, so ironically, it was Jane Parker who required us to bring this to the board for approval. So that's really great that you're speaking up. We shared this with county council, with our council. We've also gotten through it. We don't destroy typically anything that can be used in litigation. And we're pretty confident that most of those documents that we have already are out there in some shape or form in the public domain anyways. So it's more of a maintenance and clearing. We're not getting rid of anything that, that we could use. We're pretty careful about that.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks. Board members, any items on the consent agenda you'd like polled at this time? Okay, we'll go to the public. Looking right now, I don't see anything. Siri, you, anything from members of the public at the meeting or anything received?
Nothing received and no comments from the public here.
Okay, so then we'll go ahead and entertain a motion and a second. Do we have a motion for the consent agenda?
Lopez, so moves.
Done. This Story second.
Okay, moved by Lopez, seconded by Story. Siri, will you go ahead and call the roll, please?
I will. Director
Kosovici. Aye.
Director Carbone.
Yes.
Director Trinity.
Yes.
Director Friend.
Aye.
Director Labar.
Aye.
Director Lopez?
Aye.
Director McShane?
Yep.
Director Eskew? Director Phillips?
Aye.
Director Storm?
Aye.
Director Dillon?
Aye.
Okay, unanimously approved. Motion approved.
Thank you very much. Well, we have three items on our regular agenda. And we'll go ahead and start with our first, which is a presentation on the mid-year 2021 engineering and compliance activities of the district, presented by our very own Amy Climo. The floor is yours.
All right, good afternoon. Let me just get my presentation up here. Okay, all right, here we go. Okay, this is just our annual mid-year check-in of our compliance data and engineering. And we do this every year in August and then give you the annual report every year in February. So I'm just gonna go over again briefly what we do in engineering compliance and I'll go over the data. So our engineering team receives permit applications and they review the applications for compliance with federal, state, and local regulations. They issue permits with specific operating conditions to ensure compliance with those regulations. They also develop rules and regulations or revise existing regulations as necessary. And we also put together the annual stationary source emission inventory to report to the state. So this is our activity from January 1 to June 30 of this year. And for example, our permit applications are actually up. This year, we had 172 the first half of this year, and first half of last year, we had 155. I don't know if that might have been because COVID hit sort of in the middle of that 6 month period, but we're pretty much on all categories about the same as last year. And this year, we've actually issued more authorities to construct compared to last year. We issued 164 permits. This year we issued 139. So it's kind of a, usually by the end of the year, the numbers kind of wash out and average are the same year to year. So moving over to the compliance side of the house, our inspectors get those permits once they're issued, and they go out and make sure that the sources are following those permit conditions. And if they find any problems where someone's not following their permit conditions, they may have to issue violations. We also have a team that ensures that the federal asbestos regulation is followed, and that regulation requires a survey of building materials before renovations or demolitions. And we also respond to complaints. So this is just a snapshot of the first half of the year for compliance. And again, we're in a similar average ballpark of last year. The one area we're down a little bit is on our issuing notices to comply. Last year we had issued 72 in the first half of the year. This year we're at 32. And let's see, we've gotten 140 asbestos notifications, and those are the ones that are for building demolitions and renovation. And that number is actually up from last year. We've only received 120. And again, that may have been because COVID hit mid-year last year, and there wasn't much construction activity for a while, first half of last year. So as Rich mentioned, we went live in our new database July 19th. And we're using Excella Civic platform, and we're using the cloud service. So it's nice not to have a server here in our building anymore in case we have any other issues with a ransomware attack. They wouldn't be able to get our permit database server. The database is capable of handling the engineering compliance activities, such as permitting, inspections, asbestos notifications, complaints, violations, and we are now able to accept applications and payment online. And this is just a quick snapshot of what one of us staff would see when we log into Excella. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Okay, board members, any questions? Thank you, Amy. We'll move on to members of the public at this point in time. I'm not seeing any virtually. Siri?
Not here in the border, and nothing received.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Amy. And we'll move on to another presentation. Report on daily 8-hour peak ozone concentrations, hourly ozone concentrations, PM 2.5, PM 10, air monitoring data for the first two quarters 2021. Presented by our own David Frisbee. So David, the floor is yours, and thank you very much.
Okay, thanks Chairman McShane. This is otherwise known as the air monitoring mid-year summary for 2021. So I'll go over the air monitoring data for the first half of the year. There you go. So we operate 7 air monitoring stations throughout the district. An additional air monitoring station is operated by the Pinnacles National Park for measuring ozone. Ozone is measured at all of the stations, except for up in the San Lorenzo Valley, which is where we measure PM 2.5. All of the stations except measure PM 2.5, except for, of course, Pinnacles National Park. And PM10 is measured at San Juan Bautista, Hollister, and King City. In San Juan Bautista, that's our newest station. We just installed that in March. Coincidentally, Pinnacles National Park is, even though we don't operate that monitoring station, that's where we experience the highest concentrations of ozone. This is a couple of examples of our air monitoring stations. They're portable buildings that house our equipment, and we direct a sample port outside of the building. We also have a MET tower there that measures wind speed, direction, and air temperature. This is inside the building. You can see the left side instrument. That's our instrument rack. It's fairly plain. It's just a display. But in the back, you'll see in the middle picture, the sample that's taken from the outside the building and drawn in. We have to condition the sample before it's drawn into the instruments. Mostly it's just to knock out moisture. On the right side, you'll see a particle monitor, 2.5 monitor, that's a filter-based monitor. So the reason we measure is to compare the measurements against the ambient air quality standards. Both California and the federal government have particular standards for the criteria pollutants. In this case, we measure for ozone, PM2.5 and PM10. Ozone has two different averaging periods for the samples, for the standards, and at 1 hour and at 8 hours. And PM2.5 and PM10 have a 24-hour averaging period. You can see that in some cases, especially for PM10, there's a fairly big difference between the concentration that's the limit for the national standards and the California standards. National standards for PM10 is 150 micrograms per cubic meter, and the and for California standards, 50 micrograms per cubic meter, which is a significant difference. So for the first half this year, our hourly peak ozone, that's our average 1 hour ozone. The solid line here is a tiny part per billion, it's a state standard. So you can see for each of the stations in each of the counties, we're well below the standard. For the 8 hour average standard, you can see the state standard is the solid black line. We're well below the standard, well within the standard, within each of the counties. For PM2.5 concentrations, we are within the, for all of our permanent stations, we're within the standard for PM2.5. And for all of our seasonal stations, which we have up in the San Lorenzo Valley for measuring winter time wood smoke from fireplaces and wood burning stoves, we did exceed 1 day in January. And that is likely due to wood burning stoves and fireplaces, and probably a pretty strong inversion layer for that day, which caused the smoke to remain concentrated in the area. For PM10 concentrations, we did exceed in January, we exceeded both in Hollister and in King City. It's a little unusual. It's more likely a regional dust event, which is very strange to have in January, but that's what it suggests. In June, we did exceed 3 days in King City, and that was likely due to a wind event in those 3 days, lifting up agricultural dust from open fields. And the last several years, we've experienced wildfire smoke in the area from distant wildfires. And so we wanted to get a better coverage of our area for PM2.5. So we're in the process now of installing a PM2.5 smoke sensor network. This is an example of what we purchased. It is a self-contained unit. It's very simple to install and operate. You just install it on a wall or on a lamppost. It's got its own power source and its own cell network. It's got its own cell modem. And so we can receive all the data continuously. And so then we can post all that data onto a map, which we have on our wildfire smoke information page. And so we will, as we get more of these units, we'll be filling in the area. We'll be installing all of the municipalities within the district. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Board members, any questions for Mr. Frisbee?
I have one, Chair.
Okay. Go ahead, Jack.
Okay, I'm wondering at what elevation the smoke sensor senses the smoke, because I've been hearing lately that it may not smell that where we are, but if you go way up into the atmosphere, there is more smoke. So what is it looking at? What elevation?
It's looking at just an inner breathing zone, about 6 feet high.
Which would make sense.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Jack. Any other board members? Questions? Oh, there you go. Director Askew.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. So we oftentimes hear from schools, specifically during wildfire season, with concerns about the smoke levels in their, you know, specific school zone. If there were schools that wanted to purchase or host additional sensors, what's the cost for each one of these?
So we have installed most all of these at schools within the district. So we are focusing on elementary schools. The cost was $1,000 per unit per year. If they did want to host one.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other directors? Seeing none, we'll go to the public. Just looking to see if there's any hands raised. I don't see any. Siri, anything received or any comments from the public in the chambers?
No public comments in the chambers or the meeting.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Frisbee.
You're welcome.
We'll move on to our last presentation of the day, and that is our AB 2766 applicant summary and staff recommendations. Very exciting, and I guess we'll start with you, Rich, to tee this up before I imagine Alan takes over. How would you like to do it, Rich?
Yeah. Sorry.
As soon as Alan turns his
Alan. So Alan Romero with the great intro. All right, sir, the floor is yours.
So I'll just say that this is something the board sees every year at this time. We go through, and I say we, I mean Alan goes through and ranks all of the projects that have been submitted for grants. And we do a cost effectiveness survey and calculations, and we look at direct air quality emission reductions. And we come out with a list to prep you for what you're eventually gonna vote on and approve later on in the year to award these grants. So this is sort of your first opportunity to look at this. Additionally, Alan will be describing what we've come up with all of his diligent work on the bicycle up front. And we've got some, I think, new and exciting design elements that we're gonna offer for approval and acceptance for the bicycle portion of our electric vehicle incentive program. So I'll let Alan say the rest.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Shane, members of the board. I had one of my managers dub this as Christmas Eve in August. So just briefly, we'll go into the program and what we've come up with for board. So I always do this every year just to draw back to where this comes from. This was codified in 1990 by a assembly language written by Byron Scherer. It's called AB 2766. It is now part of the Health and Safety Code Section 44220. And this particular fiscal year, 2021-2022, represents the 31st year of the district's participation in this program. And to date, the district has awarded over $38 million and funded over 600 projects. This fiscal year, we have broken up our program into two major programs. The first one is the Clean Air Management Program. And this is all about traffic congestion and reducing idle time, which is where a large majority of our tri-tier pollutants come from the mobile, the motorized vehicle sector. These projects would include roundabout design and construction, adaptive traffic signal control at signalized intersections, and a new component which your board authorized last year, the Advanced Clean Transportation, which is the electrification of the medium to heavy duty fleets that are in the three counties. The other program that we are running, and we're all a pretty popular program we've run now for the last 6 years, is the clean vehicle program, which includes EV voucher incentives for public agencies to replace their light duty fleets. And then the more popular one, which is 6 years old, is the electric vehicle incentive program for residents in the three counties. This year, we're excited to include, along with all electric and plug-in hybrid light-duty vehicles, the addition of incentivizing electric bicycles. I'd like to spend a little more time describing what the EVIC program looks like. In terms of the light-duty vehicle, we have played with trying to find the sweet spots for incentive amounts. This year, we're offering $1,500 for all electric, $1,000 for used all electric, $750 for plug-in hybrids. This would be your Prius Prime, which is not eligible anymore. There are other plug-in hybrids that are eligible. And then for a used plug-in hybrid, we're offering $500. Now to spend some time on the e-bicycle incentive allocation, after getting some great input from both the RTPAs, which would be Santa Cruz RTC, their bike ped committee, and TAMC, their bike ped committee, our own advisory board, and of course your board, taking all those inputs. And what we've come up with, we think will be a nice kickoff for this program. It's gonna be challenging, but we think this will work for the first year that we'll run this. So we want to incentivize low-income families only and offer them $1,000 per bicycle. We're gonna bracket the cost of the e-bike between $1,000 and $4,000. And the last major requirement is that they must purchase the bike from an authorized dealer. That way the buyer knows what they're getting, they can get educated on how to operate it. If there needs to be any warranty repair, they know if they can take it someplace and get it fixed. So let's look about where we're at with this program for this fiscal year. The total budget allocated to it is $1,700,000. As you can see, $500,000 going to the EVIC program, which includes the e-bikes, and $1.2 million for the clean air management program. The percentages are also there. So of the total budget, 71% for clean air management, 29% for clean vehicle. This is something I like to show the board every year because it tells how we do these allocations. They're based on population per county. And so for the clean air management program allocation of 1.2 million, the breakdown by population is stated there in the percentage number. And you can see the dollar amount associated with that percentage amount. And then lastly, we look at all the requests that we get in for all eligible projects. And if you look, once again, this is the second year that San Benito County has come up with no applications. The two other counties remaining, you can see Monterey County asking over 1.5 million and Santa Cruz County asking just a little over a million. I wanted to show this bar graph because it illustrates how much money we allocate budget-wise to the projects. So if you look at what is requested by the counties and you look at how much we're actually allocating, there's a big delta. To say that it's oversubscribed, yes, it is. But what it also speaks to is the importance of making sure that we come up with enough funds to answer some of these requests, because these are not spurious applications. They're all good projects that we can't fund. One of the things that Rich alluded to is how we do these calculations. We do not entertain projects that cannot be calculated in terms of cost effectiveness. What that simply means is we're able to come up with a number that determines what the cost per ton of pollutant reduced ends up being. So to get this straight, a high cost effectiveness is not good. That means it's very expensive to reduce per ton of pollutant. A low cost effectiveness is what we want to try to get to. And we do that, and we have to do this, for the AB 2766 statute. So we have to use the CMAQ methodology for coming up with emission factors. These tables are updated every year, unlike MOITR, which does not update every year. So what's the point there? Well, every year, as the fleet in our three counties gets cleaner with newer vehicles coming on the road, the emission factors tighten up. They get more, they're not as big as they used to be. For example, 2 years ago, a typical vehicle that was 1996 or older was putting out 8 grams per mile of NOx. Today, that table says it's 2 grams. And so what's the rationale behind that? The rationale is those older vehicles, as they leave the fleet, New vehicles come in, the area is cleaner. So therefore, the emission factor tables change. And now, what does that have to do with anything? Well, it changes the cost effectiveness value in the calculation. So these are all the projects that were, that came in as applications. Three of these were not eligible, and these were three school bus projects. And the reason why they're not eligible is because we have AB 923 that mandates the funding of school buses with local DMV fees, which is what we typically do with our ZESB program. So these three buses came off the table. So what's left, a total of six. We evaluated them all, and you can see they're stacked in order of ranking, the amount of tons produced, and the actual cost effectiveness per ton of pollutant reduced. And with that, we come up with our final staff recommendation for projects. These happen to be all advanced clean transportation projects. They're looking at replacing large, high, heavy emitting vehicles within both of the counties. The Monterey MST Transit, we've given them three buses already. This is their application for their fourth bus. Chair McShane was there at the ribbon cutting ceremony for those two new ones that came in. Monterey City Disposal is asking funding for a Class 8 electric refuse hauler. These are really unique diesel spewing Class 8 vehicles. And the reason why is they may not travel a lot of miles, but in the neighborhoods, their idle time is huge. As anybody knows, whatever day your trash pickup day is, you can hear them for quite a while as they idle, picking up everybody's refuse collected. This is even more prevalent in multiple unit dwellings, where you've got a concentration of units, and the diesel 2.5 exhaust is known as a toxic air contaminant, responsible for a lot of respiratory disease. And I didn't say any more than that. City of Watsonville is asking for the same funding, and the city of Santa Cruz is looking at doing a further fleet replacement, which will also include another Class 8 refuse collector, which we awarded last year. So the grand total within the budget is $1.2 million, $300,000 a piece is what staff is recommending for funding. I just wanted to just put this metric up to emphasize the importance across the state of California. All of the EPA, Cal EPA agencies are heavily focused on electrifying and cleaning up the medium to heavy duty space. 31% of all the NOx emission in California comes from the heavy duty fleet, 31%. And with that, I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Alan. I'm sure there's some interest and some questions. There we go. Director Kosmicki, you can go ahead first and then we'll go to Director Story.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So I'm the San Benito County representative, and this is extremely disappointing to me. So first off, I'm wondering on the $100,000 that allocation that wasn't, there were no applications. Can you please describe like the level of outreach that was done in each community? And it just doesn't add up that there were zero applications in San Benito County. It's not as if San Benito County residents are really that much different from the other two counties. So really this has to, to me, it has to come back to that we're just not getting the attention that we deserve. And so I would like to know what sort of outreach, what was the outreach on this program as a whole and then specifically in our county?
Director Cosmic, I want to first point out that over the last 30 years, this at 29 years, this program is dedicated to only funding public agencies. And only when we came to the board and asked them to incentivize the public with the light duty fleet or the EBIT program, for example, that was the first time that we were able to use 2766 funds back to the public instead of a public agency. So one of the reasons, and we have got very close relationships with both LTA, COG, and Public Works, and we've done projects in the past, and I know all of the players, there's been a revolving door, especially in San Benito County, but we reach out every single year. And one of the reasons why we don't get any response is because the allocated amount, somewhere in the vicinity of $100,000, isn't enough to fund any really worthwhile project. You just don't get any takers.
Okay, any further
questions? Okay, and then, yeah, I do. The allocations themselves don't really seem to add up. When you look at the $2.6 million program, and I see Santa Cruz has $1 million. I'm sorry, I'm hearing some noise. Santa Cruz has $1 million, 0.05, and then Monterey 1.5, and maybe this just comes back to the, you're saying there's lack of interest here, and we do need to do something about that. But just by population, these allocations don't add up at all either, because Santa Cruz is not, you know, 10 times the size of San Bernardino County, and Monterey certainly is not 15 times the size of San Bernardino County either.
Let's go back to that slide right there, Director Cosmic. Those are the percentages by population taken from the Census Bureau. 57% of the population in the three counties is in Monterey. 35 is in Santa Cruz, and 8 is in San Bernardino County. So it's that's the, that large $2 million is at a funding request, not allocation. So these are the allocation numbers for all the three counties, based on a budget of $1.2 million for this particular year.
I don't know if we're looking at, it's a little hard to hear you. Honestly, it's a little hard to hear with this hybrid thing when you're at the podium, but I'm looking at the figure one, where the 0% San Bernardino County, $2.61 million total funding request. And then, yeah. Okay. So I get what you're saying. I don't understand it. I don't understand how we can have zero. And something really needs to be done, whether that's working with our COG or whomever. It just doesn't look good, to be really honest, when I see $1.5 million to Monterey, $1.05 to Santa Cruz, and zero to San Bernardino County. We just kind of always, I hate to complain and whine, but we sort of always end up with these situations when we're in these regional organizations, and we just don't have the influence that these other counties have, and we end up at the short end of the stick. I'm just really disappointed to see that. $0. It's just, it's embarrassing.
Can I recommend that you lobby for us next go around and talk to the public works director at the San Bernardino County offices and say, Highway 25 is a perfect candidate for adaptive traffic signal control. $100,000 may not buy the whole project, but it'll get some of it.
Yeah, well said. Well said. And you know, Director Kosmicki, this has come up over many years. You know, if it's not a small allocation for vehicle replacement or an electric bus, you know, in a big year, San Bernardino County could do better. And so your enthusiasm is going to help. Let me know if I can help.
Yeah, I appreciate
further,
it.
Any further questions?
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, cool. Mr. Chair, this is Zach. I do have a point to Mr. Kosmicki's point, because you and I have been on this commission, and Commissioner Story has been on for a long time. And the reality is that generally speaking, San Bernardino County just isn't submitting applications. It's not as though, I mean, every year I go back to my public works department and tell them it's time for them to consider applying. And there's years that they have, there's years that they haven't. All the local reps generally do the outreach back to their own agencies. I mean, when San Bernardino has applied, because it's so kind of infrequent, whatever it is, the application was approved because, I mean, of the, you know, if there's just one coming from the county, then there's really no debate. Also, about 7 or 8 years ago, this used to be super contentious. Like, the money was just sort of thrown into a pot. There was all this politicking behind the scenes. And I appreciate that they have these metrics now that actually provide some clarity on this. But the point is that I don't think it's an outreach issue on behalf of the district. I mean, this is a reoccurring cycle every single year. They send out the information to the local cities in the county every single year. But for me, I found that it's important to elevate it to the public works departments, because they have requests for so many different applications, and then they make a determination of whether it's really worth it. I mean, even you may notice the county of Santa Cruz this year passed, we had some adaptive signal control things, but in previous years they said, well, $200,000 really doesn't get us enough to do it. And so they made that actual decision. So I think that that's really just a discussion internally too, with the county and the local cities, as to whether they see the value in it. And B, just a reminder that, hey, there's no competition in San Bernardino County. If you guys put in for it, it's basically your $100,000, right?
And so, yeah, I hear you. I'm just venting here because I'm new to the board. This is my first year on the board of supervisors, and this sort of thing just can't happen. It's just, it's really embarrassing. I'm not blaming MBARD. I'm just really frustrated, to be honest.
That's good. I can see Alan is excited, and I am too. And, you know, let him have it. We're there with you. Thank you, Director Cosmic.
Thank you.
Director Story?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Alan, I had questions about the cost effectiveness of two of the applicants. That's number 22-02 and 22-08. you know, on the surface, the descriptions, they look like very similar applications, Class 8 electric refuge hauler. But the cost effectiveness are on both of them are very divergent. One's at 80,000 per ton, and the other one is 497,000 per ton. I was wondering if you had some just some background information that would explain that discrepancy.
Sure. Member Story, the City of Santa Cruz in their application was looking at replacing two vehicles. One of them is a 2010 Class 8 refuse collector. The other one was a 2009 Ford F500 series truck. And both of those vehicles have very limited miles, very low miles. That is a direct variable in the calculation, in the cost effectiveness calculation for the number of dollar value, 497 versus 578. So what you're looking at for 2207 is two vehicles with low miles, and with the City of Watsonville, it's one vehicle with a lot of miles. And so it's going to, if you look at the annual tons reduced, you can see with one vehicle, there's more tons reduced that, or the same amount of tons reduced than there would be for two vehicles in the application from the City of Santa Cruz. And that's just, the calculation is pretty simple. It's baseline vehicle versus replacement vehicle. There's a couple of other little factors in it called the CRF, which is cost recovery, which is kind of like an amortized number that you attach based upon the project life, and the dollar amount. So the higher the dollar amount in the project cost, that influences that high CEDC there. So both of those entities were asking $400,000, but a two for one project is going to yield a much higher cost effectiveness than a one for one project. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense. I understand that. But just to be clear, I was comparing the City of Monterey city disposal to the City of Watsonville, both referencing replacing refuse haulers.
Right. So in the city of if the city, the Monterey City Disposal Company, which is contracted specifically to serve the City of Monterey, much bigger area, 12 square miles. Santa Cruz, I forgot, 6 square miles. I did some analysis. there's more people, larger square area that they have to serve. And so the miles on the, and they're doing it two for two. So they want to replace two of their old refuse haulers, and they think they have enough to buy two, even with a single grant from us. At in this case, they're asking for 400. We're recommending three. They think they have the money to buy two. So that's a two for two. A lot of miles, a lot more miles than the City of Watsonville. So that's reflected in the cost effectiveness as well.
I understand. So the variable is total mileage.
Yes.
From them. Okay, got it. All right. Thank you, Alan.
You're welcome.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions from directors?
Sure.
Yep. Director Dillis.
Yes, thank you. I'm wondering about the low income qualification. If you've had staff had a chance to look at whether those low income limits that allow folks to qualify for vehicle incentives, if you looked at increasing that, because it looked really low the last time you looked at that.
Are you talking about the light duty EV incentive program?
Yeah. I'm looking particularly about the bicycle incentive, but I think it also applies to the vehicle incentive.
Correct. We're just doubling the amount. So if you're...
I didn't mean that so much. I meant the whether you qualify as low income or not, because it only deals with low income folks now, right? As proposed for bicycles. You have to be of low income.
Yes.
Our number was like $2,004 or something for a single person. Would seem real low. So I'm wondering if you've had a chance to look at that or hope to push that up in the future.
Well, I'm kind of having trouble understanding what your question is, because we don't determine low income status. We sub that out to Central Coast Energy Services.
Okay. Well, as I recall, there's a table that was I think in last March might have been attached to a record somewhere when I looked at the website. And it showed the dollar amounts, which looked real low. I have that somewhere in my stack here.
So the dollar amounts on the incentives?
Yes, well, the dollar amount for qualifying as low income.
Oh, no. That would probably be on our grant page.
Yeah, it's based on CCDS.
That's their number.
So we use a third party to do that. It would be a financial nightmare for us, a paperwork nightmare, to get verification and collect those records. So we just rely on them for that, for the not only electric vehicle incentive program, but also for the wood stove program. So there's a number of incentives based on it. Typically, if you're low income qualified, we double the incentive amount. And this latest round for the bicycles, we've actually significantly increased the amount, the incentive amount, from something like what we're giving at
regularly. You started at $150,
now we're up to $1,000.
Just doubled.
Yeah, so that's what we heard loud and clear. And the board has, if you have comments on that too, please fire away, because we've been workshopping this and Alan's been doing a lot of great work. And I think that's one of the loudest things we've heard, is that this is something that low-income folks can take advantage of. And we don't get in the business of determining that. It's up to CCES.
Which makes sense. Yeah. Can we use a different vendor or a different reference or something? I guess it's called, looks like, Keep Eligibility Guidelines,
right.
EGAP.
Yes.
And it has dollar amounts from one person down to 8-person family. They all look very low to me. So because we're limiting the bicycle incentives to those only that are low income, and it seemed like we're reducing the number of folks who could even apply for it. And I, of course, want the local folks to get these. But it seems like we're cutting out some of them by having such low numbers.
We'll see what we can talk to Central Coast Energy Services. Maybe there's a way we can adjust that to low income plus or something. I don't know. We could work on that to get more people qualified.
This looks like, less than minimum.
Yeah, part of the issue too is we typically rely on something, Cal Enviro Screen, that demarks and designates environmental justice communities. And it also has low income communities too. And quite honestly, we don't have any there's two small areas which qualify as a disadvantaged community. And then we've got a number of areas in South Monterey County and Pajaro and a few other areas that will qualify as low income areas too. So we can rely on that designation. So we can take a look and get back to you on that.
Yeah, we'd like to keep it simple and not create a bureaucracy around it, but the numbers just look.
Yeah, we just don't want to get into income verification and collecting tax records stuff.
It's not efficient, I get that, but to me, the number should be realistic.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think we'll learn more as the program matures past the first year that we do it.
Thank you. Anything else, Director Dillis?
No, thank you.
Okay, we'll go to Director Labar.
Thank you, Chair. Again, Alan, really appreciated the presentation to the Bike and Ped Committee. My question revolves, you had mentioned then about the other incentives that are working through the pipeline through different agencies, state and federal, and how they could be stacked with our contribution. So who would let the customer know, would it be CCES, of the other stackable incentives to further reduce the cost?
Well, I'm going to put the onus on us, Director Barr, because the state has recently revamped their clean transportation budget of $5 billion. And I'm happy to say that AB 117 it looks like it's on its way to pass. And so ARB is already, they're just going to assume it's going to pass, and they're allocating $10 million to e-bike incentives across the state. It's up to ARB to figure out how they want to dole that $10 million, how they want to add it. I would assume that they would allow stackability for funding. So we're kind of anxious to see what happens. That'll all play out when it's taken to the board in October for approval. So once we know that, and we participate in the CAPCOA Mobile Source and Grants Incentives Committee, which has a very close ear to the legislators and ARB, so we know where these dollars are going to go. So we would probably have a pretty good feel how to answer any questions regarding, hey, is there any funding available?
And I think, Mayor LaBarre, I think we would also take the extra effort to let people know that there are stacking options with CC, 3CE, with the CRBP and other sources so that, as I mentioned in my report earlier, this is probably one of the best times to buy an electric vehicle because the incentive monies that are available. And we're trying to get the word out. But we've been waiting on the state because they've had that money tied up and we weren't sure if it was going to make it to the public or not.
And that information, once it's all finalized and what we have now, for those local authorized dealers, would we give them a like a one pager of all that so they could also talk to their clients?
Yes, I'd like to do a one-on-one with them. I mean, mask on included, but I think it would be really good to do a one-on-one. I'm already in discussion with them. And so it's just a matter of now that we won't know until September what the board is going to present to us, to the public. So once the Christmas comes in September, we'll know better. We'll go do a face-to-face with the dealers and say, hey, look, we've got a program. We'd like to work with you to get these incentives out to the public. And here's what the parameters are. So let them know what the program looks like.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Chair.
Great. Thank you, Director Labar. Any other questions from directors for Alan? Okay. Seeing none, just checking public at this time for raised hands. Just one second there. I'm not seeing anything. So we'll go to anybody else in the chambers or any received comments or questions, Siri?
No comments received and no public comments in the boardroom chamber.
Thank you very much. Alan, as always, fine job. And I would echo Director Friend's comments to having a data-driven and transparent process that's really working for the region. Sans any sort of enthusiasm there in San Benito, but I think we have that licked as well. So seeing no other questions or comments, this isn't an action item at this point in time. So I just want to thank everybody for attending today, and we'll go ahead and call to conclusion the Monterey Bay Air Resources meeting Wednesday, August 18th. We'll see everybody next month on September 15th. So thank you. Oh, okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Siri, I might just stick around for just a quick one other round of feedback if you have just a second. So we'll wait till everybody goes away. Siri? Oh, hi, gosh, that owl has quite a view. So just real quick, can you hear me okay?
Your sound is great.
Good. So some other things that I just would say that Anne had done in the past that I think would be helpful is making me a co-host. And then obviously, yeah, when it comes time, and you may have done that and I may not have even noticed, but that's helpful. And the other thing, and this is, again, if we still have the hybrid meeting in September, I liked how Alan did that with his laptop. I thought that for the presenter to be in front of a laptop that can sometimes come across as clear or help. And maybe the one last thing I was gonna say is just to watch that participant panel, people dialing in, because I'd gotten a text message from John Phillips, chief of staff. He, for whatever reason, his internet went out or he got kicked out and he tried to get back in and for whatever reason, he couldn't. So just, and like me trying to come in via the link, right? I for some reason, I don't think I got the calendar invite or the.
Hi, Steve. This is Carol. So, when you join the meeting, do you join on the Zoom link?
Yep.
On the agenda? Okay, because it didn't come in today. Chair Chang, I sent. Because I want to make this clear. I sent an individual email from the Zoom panelist, and I sent it 2 days prior to the meeting, as Anne has indicated, and I sent one this morning. That's the one that I'll be joining with, not the one that's printed on your agenda. The one printed on your agenda is for general public.
Okay.
Yes, so I
Right. And I'll be on the lookout and do a better job to find that special link to get me right in. But if for some reason I need to go in through the general public link, just be on the lookout to promote, you know, like be scanning that. But yeah, for whatever reason, maybe it's my other email. I haven't seen that, or maybe it goes into spam or something, but I'll look for that and do a better job. And who knows, this might be our last hybrid meeting. You know, I wanted to offer that feedback. Thank you, Carol.
Yes, and since we are in a hybrid meeting, we have two laptops, so she's on one and I'm on another. So that's kind of great. Yeah. Okay, thank you for the feedback.
Yep, great stuff. Okay, thanks. See you guys next month or sooner.
Okay. They got a supercharger. Oh, yeah.